Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're getting into something really unique and pretty intense, actually. Our source is this incredibly raw audio account. It's one person's story of navigating, well, profound childhood trauma. And it starts with this statement that just stops you in your tracks. My father was a terrible man, and I'm glad he's dead. So our mission here is to explore, you know, impartially, the journey and the experiences that lead someone to say something that powerful. We want to pull out what we can learn about resilience, about boundaries, and about, well, taking back your own story from a really difficult past. Let's dig in.
Yeah, and what you really hear right away in this account is just the sheer unpredictability of her childhood home. It sounds utterly chaotic. She uses this phrase, you never knew what was coming next. Yeah. And she talks about these, quote, family meetings.
Right, which weren't meetings at all, were they?
Not even close. Purely disciplinary, she says. Never a discussion. And then there's the father's drinking. He'd drink himself into oblivion, often blasting loud music. It paints a picture of just constant instability.
And those late night visits? That part was chilling.
Oh, absolutely. Waking the kids up at 2 a.m., slurring, basically using them as emotional dumping grounds, blaming everyone else for his problems, and the kid's survival tactic, pretending to be asleep.
Because if he knew they were awake.
Exactly. It wouldn't end until maybe 4 a.m. It's just, yeah.
That's such an impossible wait for a child. And she mentions being singled out, right, at 7 years old.
Yes. The chosen one, she calls it. The counselor. He'd specifically unload on her, blaming her mother for his own ruined dreams. He wanted to be a helicopter pilot, apparently, and somehow that was the mother's fault.
But even then, as a child, she saw through it. That insight is remarkable.
It really is. She realized, you know, it wasn't her mom. It wasn't the kids. It was the alcoholism. She says it so powerfully. Not her. Not us. Not anything else but the bottle he kept clutched tighter than his own children.
Wow. That really drives home what was missing, doesn't it?
Completely. And she spells it out very clearly later. She says, no, I love yous. No, I'm proud of you. No safety, no praise, no softness.
So it's not just neglect. It's like an active void.
Precisely. An active vacuum of any kind of affirmation or security. And when you have that vacuum, that complete lack of a safety net,
then the fear and the violence must hit even harder.
Exactly. It amplifies everything.
Yeah.
Which sets the stage for some of the specific incidents she describes later.
Yeah, there was one that really stood out. The incident when she was 12.
Uh-huh. She comes home with a friend, hears her mother crying, her father yelling.
Opens the door, and he has his hands around her mother's throat.
Just terrifying. And her immediate reaction is pure instinct, right? She screams, get the F off her.
A brave reaction. But then the realization that follows is just mind-bending.
It really is. She says, almost immediately after screaming, she realized she was more afraid of getting in trouble for swearing
than for confronting the actual violence happening right in front of her.
Think about that. It speaks volumes about how deeply distorted the family dynamic was. The fear of breaking his rule overshadowed mortal danger.
It's like her survival instincts were completely rewired, prioritizing dad's arbitrary rules over protecting her own mother.
It shows how trauma can just warp your fundamental understanding of threat and safety. So the big question becomes, how do you even start to heal from that? How do you find agency?
Exactly. And that's where her story takes a really interesting turn. It's about reclaiming control, but maybe not in the way you'd expect. She talks about when her father was old and needed help, and she made a conscious choice.
To be kind to him.
Yes, to be kind. But crucially, she says, not because he deserved it. It wasn't about him at all.
It was for her. A deliberate personal decision. It sounds like a powerful act of, well, self-liberation, maybe.
That's a great way to put it. She sort of reframed him in her mind. He wasn't dad anymore. He was a lonely old man who needed help.
That detachment is so important. It's about establishing those internal emotional boundaries, isn't it? Protecting her own peace, finally.
Yeah, not expecting anything back, just controlling her own actions, her own emotional state.
And that detachment, that reframing, seems absolutely central to her ability to move forward. She's very clear about it. She says she couldn't hold on to every single painful memory. Every insult, those silent dinners, having to, you know, separate weed seeds for him.
Right, or being told she was nothing. You can't carry all of that.
You can't. Or, as she puts it, she wouldn't have made it. So she actively chose not to carry it all. And this isn't denial, I don't think.
No, it feels more like curating your own past. Like deciding what gets to live inside your head.
Exactly.
Mm.
It's like cognitive reframing, but on a life scale.
Mm.
She's actively choosing which parts of the narrative to focus on to build her present and future. Mm. It's about flipping the script.
Taking control of the narrative is taking control of the healing. That's a powerful insight.
It really is. You decide what defines you moving forward.
So what did that look like for her? This act of reframing, this self-liberation, what did it build?
Well, it built a life that directly defied everything he said she would be.
He told her she'd never be anything, called her worthless, a bitch, a failure, a joke, horrible things.
Just devastating things to hear from a parent. But she systematically proved him wrong, point by point.
She traveled, right?
Got a degree.
Yep. Built businesses.
Yeah.
Created a peaceful life for herself. And the key is, she did all of this consciously choosing healing, peace, and joy. And she did it without his love, without his praise, without his support. Which leads to her ultimate statement.
The greatest revenge I ever got was happiness.
That hits hard, doesn't it?
It really does. It's not about hurting him back. It's about building her own joyful life, despite him.
And that really sums up the core takeaway from this deep dive, I think. It's the immense power you can find in reclaiming your adulthood after trauma steals your childhood. Her journey shows how vital it is to nurture those parts of yourself that someone tried to crush. She chose truth over bitterness.
Yeah, and that leads to her final powerful thought about his death. I'm glad he's gone, because now I don't have to pretend anymore. No more pretending.
Yeah.
It's authenticity. It wasn't about getting his approval in the end. It was about finding her own peace, her own truth.
That feels incredibly validating. You know, her story underscores that you absolutely do not have to love someone who hurt you. It's okay. And it highlights the courage it takes to speak your truth, even if, as she says, it shakes the room.
Absolutely. It's freeing, even if it's uncomfortable.
So for you listening, maybe this deep dive brings up a question. What does finding your own version of happiness as revenge look like? And how might speaking your truth, even when it feels difficult or maybe uncomfortable for others, contribute to your own sense of peace and ultimately your freedom?